This edition of the Packet Pushers podcast is brought to you by Network Faculty, the multi-vendor training library, bite-sized IT training videos on demand. If you want to learn real networking, Network Faculty can help. Visit networkfaculty.com and sign up today. Welcome to the Packet Pushers podcast, a show about data networking. I am Ethan Banks, your host for today's packet adventure. You can follow me on Twitter at ECBanks. Today, we're covering an open source piece of software called Perf Sonar. And to quote from the perfsonar.net website, Perf Sonar is an infrastructure for network performance monitoring, making it easier to solve end-to-end performance problems on paths crossing several networks. It contains a set of services delivering performance measurements in a federated environment, and these services act as an immediate layer between the performance measurement tools and the diagnostic or visualization applications. And this layer is aimed at making and exchanging performance measurements between networks using well-defined protocols. Now, I have no idea if that opening paragraph helped anyone understand what Perf Sonar was at all, but there's a group of guys on the phone today that are going to help us get a good handle on what Perf Sonar is and why you care. First off, I'm going to introduce a familiar voice, Mr. Greg Farrow. How are you from the UK doing, sir?
I'm behind bars. It's all about security, man. It's all about preventing people from having fun. It's about making sure that people can't access services on the internet. That's what it's all about this week.
Are you the preventer of information services?
That's right. I am channeling MORDAC, the preventer of information services. My job is to lock everything down and take out any scintillion of hope that people will have fun at work.
Very good. That seems to be a service that you would provide absolutely excellently.
Yeah, of course I wouldn't use it. But all the poor people can, you know, put up with whatever they get, whatever I see fit to give them. Security policies to the left and standards to the right. Bring it on.
We appreciate whatever crumbs fall from your table, sir. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And aside from Mr. Greg, who you can follow on Twitter at Ethereal Mind, we have Brian Tierney, who is one of the project leads and really one of the driving forces behind Perf Sonar. Brian, would you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. Hi there, Ethan. This is Brian Tierney. I work for the Energy Sciences Network, which is the network that connects all of the large Department of Energy laboratories in the U.S. together. We run a 100 gigabit per second backbone, and we help make big data science work.
Very cool. Thank you very much for coming on the show to talk about Perf Sonar. And then Nick Baraglio, who's been on the Packet Pushers podcast before, is also with us. Nick, why don't you introduce yourself for those who maybe missed you the first time around, and tell us what you do.
Sure. I'm Nick Baraglio. I am a network engineer for a major Midwestern research university. I basically make the packets move and the packets stop based on what the people want. You can find me on Twitter at Baraglio or on my blog at forwardingplane.net.
Great. Thank you very much for coming on the show. And why don't we just get right into what Perf Sonar is. Now, I read that paragraph, which was kind of stilted with some awkward phrasing, and people are listening to that going, I don't think I get it. Brian, maybe you could kind of give us a rundown of what Perf Sonar is really all about.
Sure. I'll sort of speak from the point of view of scientists moving scientific data around, but I think the general concepts would apply to anybody because I'm used to talking about science data. But so I've been working with scientists for years who need to move data sets from point A to point B, and it often takes a lot longer than they thought it should. And people just sort of naturally, historically, have blamed the network. And often it turns out the network wasn't to blame, but we really wanted to put together a tool that let people, one, find out what speeds their networks actually were capable of. You know, are they on a 1 gig network or a 10 gig network or something slower? And what could the network be capable of? And then if it is a lot slower than it should be, to provide some tools to help dig down and figure out why, in fact, it's slower than it should be.
one of the things I noticed in that first paragraph is it sounds like this is intended to stitch together different network domains. I mean, one organization owns a part of this network that this data is traversing. Someone else owns another part and someone else owns another part, et cetera. But PerfSonar can give you an end-to-end understanding of what's going through all of those different networks and what the performance is like. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there are some commercial tools out there that maybe work well within a single domain. But in our world, typically networks data is going from one campus across a couple different backbone networks to another campus. And there were no standardized ways to run tests across all these various networks. So the first step in the PerfSonar project was meeting and just agreeing upon some standard mechanisms for sharing this network data, standard mechanisms for launching the tools, for collecting the results of the tools, for putting those results in databases, and then standard ways to query the data back out of the databases.
There's an element of trust there that goes in where everyone that owns a particular network is working with other owners to share data and interpret the results.
Yeah, and that's been a bit of an uphill battle over the years, convincing people that that the benefits of sharing data offset the risks of sharing data.
So, Nick, you're kind of coming at this from a participant standpoint, where you're using PerfSonar. How does that work for you from your perspective?
So I'm generally a big fan of sharing of data because I think the more information that you have, the better, and the more people that have that, you know, generally speaking, when it comes to networking is a good thing. So I haven't had too big of an issue in the R&E community building out, you know, the meshes of tests that we run and are necessary to do the things that move the data that we need to move. That being said, though, there are mechanisms that should be mentioned within PerfSonar to limit say the amount of bandwidth any test can run from any given source. So there are some security mechanisms or limiting mechanisms in place for that. And it's a very modular tool. So you can turn on only the, it's sort of a hybrid of a tool, right? It's a toolbox more than an actual tool in and of itself with a bunch of different stuff inside of it. You can enable or disable the tools within the toolbox based on need. So if I want to be able to do bandwidth testing, I can turn on only that test and it will run those tests to and from whatever sources and destinations I deem necessary for my particular needs. Same thing goes for the one-way latency testing or the NDT, the toolkit for host tuning. You can enable or disable that.
Yeah, for example, on our network, we have things configured to be wide open to the research and education space, but completely closed to the commercial space. So, you know, we don't have to risk anybody probing our systems from their home cable modem lines or whatever. But other people have it locked down much tighter than that. They just only allow tests to or from their close collaborators.
Why don't we talk about what the architecture for PerfSonar looks? Let's say I am interested in participating in PerfSonar and getting measurements and sharing data. What would I be installing? What am I actually setting up?
Well, PerfSonar comes packaged, bundled along with a CentOS installation. So if you download the image from the website, it sort of assumes you're starting on a completely empty machine and an empty disk. And the first thing it'll do is go off and install CentOS 6.4 for you. And then it will install the set of PerfSonar RPMs on top of that to do all the PerfSonar stuff. There's a web GUI that you then go in through and configure the specific tests that you're interested in running.
Implicitly, then, there's another PerfSonar box somewhere else that you're wanting to talk to?
Correct. One of the PerfSonar services is called the lookup service. So all PerfSonar nodes, when they come up, will register themselves into the lookup service, and then you can search through that to find other boxes to run tests to. People can put down a community string of what community they're a part of, you know, what particular scientific collaboration they're a part of or what network they're connected to. And so the community strings can be helpful to find other nodes of interest to you. Sometimes you just, you know, you your friend told you they set up a box. So then you go to that box in particular. Currently, there's about 550 percenter nodes that are showing up in the lookup service. There could well be a lot more than that on private networks where they're not registering themselves in the global lookup service because they're not actually open for public testing. But, it's the public ones that are easier for us to track. And currently, there's about 550 and growing at a rate of about 10 to 20 a month. So it's the percenter community has been growing quite quickly lately.
Yeah, and it should also be mentioned, I think, that there's a very active mailing list. And you get essentially just network operators from all over the world on there that are utilizing PerfSonar, not just within the R&E community anymore.
Would it be useful across an internet backbone to have two PerfSonar nodes testing between themselves?
Sure. You can do latency testing or bandwidth testing. It's not recommended to run them both on the same box for obvious reasons, but depending on if you're say you're a backbone operator and you want to be able to identify, potential bottlenecks at different locations within your backbone, you say you place N number of PerfSonar nodes and you mesh them together, and they'll create a very, very elegant graph that can tell you, from this box to this box, I have one way bandwidth problem, and from this box to this box, I'm fine. So you can start to nail down where your congestion problems might lie. For a while, Brian, wasn't there a pretty good success rate of PerfSonar finding problems within networks and at almost every single installation?
Yeah, particularly actually at the end sites, right? I mean, the backbones run pretty clean for the most part. I mean, there's certainly problems here and there. But it was often when an end site would bring up a box, they would immediately find some problem. One of the main things that PerfSonar seems to be used for these days, and Nick, you can probably talk more about this, is detecting horribly underpowered or misconfigured firewalls. Firewalls can just torpedo performance if they're used improperly.
Oh, I can talk ad nauseum about that.
Hey, don't diss my fun, fellas. Don't. Yeah. I put firewalls in so people like you can be annoyed at me and I can feed. I can feed off that unhappiness.
You have definitely succeeded.
Now, so one of the big problems that we face in R&E today is the fact that a lot of campuses and insights, labs or research facilities have put in inline filtering devices that may be doing something as simple as, stateful firewalling, or they may be doing something as complex as deep packet inspection. That tends to cause researchers that need to move very large data sets, like, for example, moving data from the Large Hadron Collider. That becomes very, very difficult to do through any type of inline security appliance. It basically ruins the throughput. So PerfSonar is very adept at sort of figuring out where those problems between what two points those problems exist. And the notion of a science DMZ has sort of sprung out of that, I believe. And so now a lot of these facilities that have the firewalls in line at, say, their main internet border have deployed what's being called a science DMZ, which is a potentially higher bandwidth. A lot of them are 100 gig at this point that goes around those appliances, essentially because of the performance issues that they introduce.
Yeah, now, Nick, when you were talking about, I was asking about testing across the internet backbone, was it practical? And you said, oh, yes. And I think you hit upon a really important point, which is PerfSonar isn't testing just one PerfSonar box to another. You can actually bring in a whole bunch of PerfSonar boxes and do a full mesh sort of a test. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. It's meant to be meshed as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it you get so much more data from a mesh than you do from just a point to point.
Yeah, that's the way we run it on our backbone. We actually have, we have one PerfSonar box co-located with all of our routers. It's roughly 35 routers, I believe. We don't run a full mesh because that gets a little overwhelming. We have lots of partial meshes. These tests just sort of go on in the background continuously. and let you know if problems pop up, and then you can, you know, go back and figure out when a problem emerged. So a lot of times you can see, oh, well, performance went down by a factor of 10 3 days ago. Who changed what 3 days ago? But then there's also just having the boxes out there to be able to run tests on demand is extremely useful as well.
Yeah, so I think one of the important things that's a side effect of having these boxes out there doing automated tests is they, by definition, are building a baseline for you to go back and reference later, which is in Backbone and even campus networking, that's, in my opinion, incredibly important to have that baseline. So then you can tell when things are having problems.
So, yeah, so there's a historical element you're saying there as well.
Yeah, right. We've used that extensively, really. I mean, they build these graphs that can go back and you can reference them over seemingly long periods of time, you know, depending on how long you've been running them. And you can see, oh, well, here's where we did the router upgrade, or here's where, you know, the firewall failed and we had to, you know, go around it. And those kind of things become very apparent as far as the historical baseline of your mesh or your point to point, however you have it set up. Ours are all on a mesh. So we get sort of different perspectives on every topological change that we see.
Yeah. I'm seeing some comparisons here to, like, I do mostly enterprise networking. And so I have a lot of Cisco routers at the edge and they have their IP SLA operations that I can do. And I can use a third party tool to build a mesh of IP SLA operations and kind of point out problems here, problems there. I kind of know, oh, I've got a jitter problem going across this particular link in this direction across this carrier, and pull out things like that and then get some historical information. But this sounds like it works on a much bigger scale, and I'm going to speculate here, has maybe more testing features than SLA would give me.
Within the testing suite, you've got, you know, anything from performance testing and baselining of throughput to latency testing. Now, like I said before, it's not recommended to run those on the same box for obvious reasons. But, you know, the one-way latency testing, for example, you can create a mesh of Personar nodes, and they can look at all of the latency attributes that OAMP, which is the one-way latency testing daemon piece of software, can record, and you can go back and see, you know, oh, well, now I've got, you know, this much jitter on this particular link that wasn't there a week ago. And or if you're doing performance testing, you know, you can look back at the baselines of your throughput over time, or you can do on-demand testing. And the thing that I really like about it is that you can do on-demand testing from two nodes that you may not be connected to. So if I log into one of my Personar nodes, I can do a test from two other nodes that I'm not, that are just out there that I have access, that I know exist. And I can run tests between those two without being in that path.
You can even launch the test from your laptop. I do that all the time.
Yep.
As long as your laptop's connected to the right network, you can just initiate it without even having to SSH anywhere. I'd like to mention too that, Nick mentioned the latency tool. The latency tool also measures packet loss. And a lot of times we find that tool really useful for detecting bad optics or dirty fibers or things like that. There seems to be a fair number of scenarios where other monitoring isn't detecting that there's a dirty fiber someplace. And the OAMP tool that's part of the Personar suite does a really good job of finding those problems.
As I'm imagining a Perfsonar deployment, there's got to be some key places where you would want to put a Perfsonar box. If I'm understanding this right, a Perfsonar is not going to know what is in a particular path. I mean, there's a path that's one Perfsonar talking to another Perfsonar, and in that link, there could be several routers, some switches, as you've mentioned before, firewalls in line. So how do you position a Perfsonar box correctly to best enable testing?
Well, in the best case, they're everywhere. We actually had a fairly difficult troubleshooting case about a month ago where I think the trace route showed it was in the neighborhood of 10 hops, and we actually had a Perfsonar node at all 10 hops. So it was really useful. We could go hop by hop by hop. And figure out where the problem was. In this case, it was tricky because it turns out there was a problem at both ends of the path. At one end of the path, the problem ended up being a firewall that was misconfigured. And the other end of the path, it turned out that there was a really cheap, crappy switch along the way with no buffering whatsoever that was dropping packets really badly. So having per center nodes at every hop was able to let us zero in on where the problem was. But clearly that maybe isn't always practical. So our first advice is to try to put them basically at the transition points between networks, you know, the edge of your network into the edge of the next network.
That would be, you know, a perf sonar box that's kind of hanging off of a particular section of network where traffic would be transiting.
Right.
Because you're not transiting it through the perf sonar box. It's just
No. It's just, it hangs off the router. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we positioned ours, you know, at strategic locations inside and outside of our administrative firewall domain, off of our Science DMZ, off of our core, and then in particularly high usage departmental buildings like high energy physics. For example, the supercomputing center, they have their own in there. And then we mesh those together. And then we also have them meshed with other things that we need to talk to, like resources on the ESnet, for example, is one of the big communication paths that we utilize. So placing them in the most, you know, the most strategic locations within, you know, financial and political reason is the way that we've done it.
There's no cost for perf sonar itself. It's more you've got to cough up the hardware to run it on.
Yeah, you have to buy the hardware. You have to buy the ports. You know, for bandwidth testing, we do 10 gig to the host, to the perf sonar host. So you have to have a router port for that, or switch port, and you have to have generally that we plug them into routers, but. And then you also have to have the host hardware with 10 gig interface in it.
Yeah, it's actually a good segue. I was looking at the mind map that you guys built for this show, and throughput testing is one of the things that perf sonar can do. How big of a link could you actually saturate with perf sonar?
It'll do 10 pretty easily. I know Brian can probably comment a little more on this, but I know there's work on the Web10G kernel for 100 gig. There aren't currently any host 100 gig ports, but I've heard of people running 40 gig.
Yeah, it totally depends on the hardware you use. And in general, in our world, we recommend people deploy 10 gig hosts because they're trying to do 10 gigs worth of data transfers, and it's more representative to use a 10 gig tester. We have in fact been playing around with 40 gig testers in our lab, and we're getting pretty close to being able to do 40 gigs. But, you know, clearly you've got to be careful on how you configure perf sonar a little bit. You don't want your entire network to be filled with test traffic.
So, right.
So, I mean, luckily TCP does the right thing and backs off for the most part. But
at least it'd be secure. If all we had was test traffic on there, I wouldn't have to worry about all this.
Nice.
Goal focus, that's me. Right?
Exactly.
I get paid on results, not style.
Now we did some testing. One of the engineers in particular at the supercomputing center did some very very in-depth testing with 40 gig host NICs and was able to essentially saturate the 40 gig through the 40 gig switch. And in one of the working groups I'm in, we're talking about hanging a perf sonar node at 40 gig off of one of our aggregation routers in Chicago.
Brian, as you pointed out, it's in no small part, a function of the hardware that you're running it on. You throw a big box at it with a lot of cores. And I don't know how much of a role memory would play. I'm imagining CPU is more significant.
Yeah, CPU, and there's still a little bit of tuning you need to do out of the box. Linux doesn't quite get everything right for those speeds. The website that I run called fasterdata.es.net has lots of tuning tricks to get hosts to run at 10 gig speeds and 40 gig speeds. So there's a couple little knobs you need to tweak. But most in general, like $2,000 host these days will fill a 10 gig pipe relatively easily.
So we've kind of hit on a few of the different tools that are in the suite here, throughput and and kind of some of the troubleshooting that can be done here. But I know there's kind of a big set of tools that perf sonar is capable of. You guys want to walk through the highlights of the cool tools that are involved in the perf sonar suite?
Sure. I think one of the ones that we found useful is NPAD, And what InPad is, it's essentially a web server that runs a Java app that will, you point your web browser at it, and it'll allow you to, it'll run a set of tests against your host that will allow you to pick out any potential problems with the tuning of the actual host. And that can be really useful for pointing users at, or, you know, high-end users that may want to transfer large amounts of data and having trouble doing so. Point them at that, make sure their hosts are tuned correctly.
And by hosts being tuned correctly, I assume you're talking about specific TCP stack parameters that could be tuned on their Linux kernel or whatever that would improve throughput for them.
Right, right. I mean, Brian can probably talk in a little more detail about the technical specifics of it. But essentially, you know, one of the things that we've utilized to root out problems is the InPad toolkit. And one of the most common things as a day-to-day problem that we've seen is, on high-end workstations or high-end machines where you need to transfer large amounts of data, the MTUs aren't set correctly. You know, you're running standard MTUs instead of jumbo frames, which is going to significantly decrease the amount of throughput that you can get in and out of your host. And the InPad toolkit can identify that and show you, oh, hey, you know, you're running, you know, 1500 byte frames instead of 9000. That's one of the things that we've seen on many occasions.
Yeah, that's one of the main ones. And the other really common one is that just the TCP window buffer size isn't set large enough. And this tool will tell you if your congestion window limited. And, you know, it's just a simple setting using syscontrol on Linux to go in and increase that to allow you to have more buffer for TCP.
That's clever. That's really clever. Because at 40 gig, your buffer size is really important.
Yeah, like over the years, Linux has gradually increased the buffer size to be a more reasonable value for most folks. But anybody at the high end really trying to do 10 gig flows, the defaults still aren't quite there, and you still need to go in and bump them up a little bit.
I'm going to assume WAN acceleration never comes into play at these kind of speeds, because WAN accelerators really don't play in that space. But it did remind me of some of the tuning that these WAN accelerators do.
It's a similar idea, and some of these Personar tools sort of, WAN accelerators mean you don't need to worry as much about the end host tuning, but the Personar tools will tell you that the end hosts, you know, aren't quite tuned correctly.
And I think it kind of points to a long-term decline of WAN accelerators in popularity, because it becomes possible to tune your host correctly and get good throughput over long distances without the benefit of the WAN accelerators being in the middle, which reduces complexity in the long term.
Yep, as long as you don't have too much congestion in your local area network, that's absolutely true.
I win.
Sorry. Sorry. You mentioned NPAD. What other tools are there that we should be aware of?
Well, one thing that can be quite useful, there's actually a reverse traceroute tool. So you can have the Personar node do a traceroute back to you or to some other location. So you can look for routing asymmetries and things like that. That's often quite useful. I don't know if we actually gave the name of the throughput tool. The throughput measurement tool is called BWCTL, stands for bandwidth control, which is basically a wrapper for the iPerf tool that I think everyone's familiar with. But BWCTL is nice in that it only allows one iPerf running on the host at any given time. So you know that the results are truly for your test and not potentially impacted by other people's tests. And it also has this fine grain access control in terms of what subnets are allowed to run tests and what speed of UDP tests you can run and those sorts of things. So you don't have to, you know, get in and muck with your IP tables or anything to do access control. That's all configurable through the BWCTL program.
So one of the other things that I always mention, that's because it's very important to me, is PerfSonar, much like I think every application and should be, is completely V6 aware. So anything, if you've got native IPv6, it will run its tests over that. You can run, you know, against the network diagnostic tester against V6 or V4. So it's completely dual stack aware, which I think is pretty important.
Now, we've talked about running Perf Sonar across networks with lots and lots of bandwidth. Let's say I'm an enterprise and I've got comparatively small links going across, say, a provider's MPLS cloud. If I stick a Perf Sonar on either end of the cloud there to my different sites and want to run tests, does that work there if I'm dealing with like T1, E1 speeds or maybe 100 megabit per second speeds?
It'll definitely work just fine in that environment. Particularly the packet loss detection could be very useful in that environment. But yeah, it really would work at any speed.
Nick, we were talking just a little bit ago about some of the troubleshooting exercises that you've done with Perf Sonar. Do you want to walk us through one of those?
The most recent one was also an MTU problem. User trying to transfer large amounts of scientific data sets and having some performance, perceived performance problems where they were getting, like an order of magnitude less than they probably should have been. After doing, stepping through the paths of the core network and the WAN pieces, making sure all the ducks are in a row there, had them point their browser at the NDT instance running outside of our network. Lo and behold, it ended up being an MTU problem on their host. Actually, that was the NPAD instance. And, set the MTUs up and everything went to about what he expected at that point. So it's actually very quick, very easy fix.
Yeah, Nick mentioned the phrase, what he expected. One of the things we find is that often people don't have a clue what to expect. And one of the really nice things about Perf Sonar is, assuming that the right tests are running, anybody can just go and say, oh, well, from my campus edge to this other campus edge where I'm trying to transfer my data, I can see that the Perf Sonar nodes are able to get 6 gigabits per second, yet my file transfer is getting 60 megabits per second. What's wrong? So it gives them the knowledge that they should dig deeper, that they should maybe complain to somebody, that they're maybe using the wrong tool, that they might have their hosts mistuned. A lot of times people don't have any idea, should this network be capable of 6 gigs or 6 megs? And Perf Sonar is really useful to just as a level setting tool so people know what to expect.
Right. And that actually brings up another, that's a very good point. Using protocols that maybe aren't meant to do the types of things that people are trying to do with them, this can also help sort of rule out the network as a potential problem or bottleneck or what have you. Another instance that comes to mind is, this is actually some time ago, folks trying to transfer big amounts of data using SCP. And the problem they were running into was that there was, the encryption overhead that goes along with that, but also the internal windowing that SCP had built into it. So pointing them at the Perf Sonar instance to run tests against their hosts helped to rule out the fact that the hosts were in fact tuned reasonably, and that the network path up to the Perf Sonar box was clean. So that allowed us to start looking at other, what other reasons could there be? Oh, they're using, a file transfer protocol that's not really meant to do, large throughput data sets at this rate.
Yeah, a similar example we had once is somebody submitted a trouble ticket, assuming the problem was with the wide area network. And it turned out that they were trying to write to an NSF-mounted file system that was really horribly oversubscribed. So, the problem was completely in the disk write part of the problem, but they just assumed the problem was in the wide area network because at home it's their DSL line that's congested, right? So, Perf Sonar is really good at sort of eliminating the network as the source of the problem.
Well, what's the future hold for Perf Sonar? I mean, it sounds like an active project. You're ramping up with a lot of new folks, new servers coming online and so on. Where do things head next?
We're still, there's always more to be done. I mean, one of the areas that definitely could use some more attention is some of the graphical visualization and analysis tools. They definitely, at the moment, still kind of require a network engineer type to look at them. We'd like them to be a little bit more user-friendly to people who aren't necessarily network engineers. Some of the tools are starting to hit some scalability issues as PerCenter gets more and more popular. If you set up a mesh too large, we're starting to hit a couple issues. So we're going to go back and refactor some of the code for that. We're always looking for people to join our open source community. We'd love to have more developers, more testers. We have a really active email list that lots of people are happy to jump in and help with issues on the email list. But we don't have as many people helping actually write code. So we're always looking for people willing to contribute.
Yeah, and as an open source project, you can jump right in, get involved, and contribute code. That's one of the beautiful things about open source. So and it sounds like you got an open invite to whoever wants to get involved.
Yep.
Well, thanks a lot, you guys, for coming on the show and talking about PerfSonar. It sounds like a very interesting project that I have several uses for already myself. So I may be trying to at least download that and get a good look at it and run a few throughput tests myself. Brian, I know you're one of the driving forces behind PerfSonar. Now, do you blog? Are you on Twitter? Anything like that where folks can follow you?
Oh, I'm kind of old school, but I do maintain a website called fasterdata.es.net that has a huge amount of data on all sorts of topics, everything from Linux tuning to what are the most efficient data transfer tools, and then a lot of information on PerfSonar and links to the PerfSonar website from there. PerfSonar website is psps.perfsonar.net, but just go to Faster Data and you'll find everything you need.
Thanks very much for coming on the show, Brian. And Nick, I know you've been on the show before, and thanks for coming back and chatting with us yet again. How can folks follow you?
Oh, thank you. I'm on Twitter at Braulio, just my last name, and I have a blog at forwardingplane.net.
And that's a good blog. You should go up there and read what Nick is writing.
Thank
Mr.
You.
Farrow, are you still sober at this point in the show?
What are you suggesting, sir?
Well, I'm suggesting you've been awfully quiet, and so what's been occupying your time? And a beer came to mind. I'm just saying.
I've been writing stuff. I published an article today for InfoWorld. I've been expanding my outlets, and I've been stunned by the amount of hubris that I have that I can actually write a blog post that says SDN 101 in 10 easy steps, which is – you know, you just really can't explain SDN. I mean, we've spent tens of hours on this show talking about it, and we still haven't solved it. So, but of course, people can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com, on the Twitters as at etherealmind. You'll find me on Facebook as greg.farrow.etherealmind, which is my Facebook page. You can follow along there because I've been corrupted in the never-ending game of seeking more attention. And I look forward to seeing you on the internets in the near future.
I can't believe you went back to Facebook. I'm still trying to get over that. It's just
well, you know, so here's the story behind that, right? Google Reader went away and my stats dropped by 1,000 instantly. And, you know, ultimately you and I want to turn this into a full-time gig. And the only way we can do that is if we have people's attention and getting our content to people so that they can follow it. And if I'm serious about being, you know, like I realized just recently that we run a startup. You know, we are entrepreneurs. And if I'm going to be an entrepreneur, I'm going to act like one and have no morals.
And in fairness, that's why I'm trying to ramp up ethancbanks.com, that blog, and get that off the ground to have yet another outlet for content. Because for just exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. You've just got too much awesome just to have one place.
Yeah.
I'm totally going to steal that, by the way. That's a great quote.
Well, again, I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter, and I just mentioned my blog, ethancbanks.com. And, of course, the show can be found at packetpushers.net. And all the content that we're creating at packetpushers.net from the podcast and then the very excellent community blog. A lot of guys and girls have contributed to the community blog that is also at packetpushers.net. So if you head on up there, you can subscribe to our RSS feeds and keep in touch with just what we're doing. If you have any questions for Brian and Nick, of course, you can try to reach out to them through their websites or Twitter. But if you like, you could also email us and we'll forward it on to them, packetpushers@gmail.com. Thanks very much for listening to the show today, and remember that too much networking would never be enough.